Hey, hey, when you hear that music, you know that this is an edition of Spiritual Perspectives. Spiritual Perspectives, looking at real life from, well, a spiritual perspective. I'm Scout Bartlett. I'll be your host. And so allow me to do a quick appreciation for the First Church of Christ Science in Mill Valley. I'll be your host as we guide you along, but I want to introduce you to our guest today. Our guest actually grew up out here in the Bay Area, since we're originating from San Francisco. Our guest grew up here in the Bay Area in Mill Valley, hiking, climbing, being among the redwood trees, some of my favorite family, the redwood trees, and has relocated. But along the way in her career, she's worked as editor for the Christian Science Publishing Society, also media and legislative liaison, which had to have been interesting, in Massachusetts, and also has regularly been a contributor and published in the Huffington Post. So we know we're talking to somebody that's real. Along the way, she's also built herself and moved into a practice to where now she is a full-time practitioner, speaker, and teacher of healing through a Christian Science tradition. So everybody, I'd like to introduce you to Ingrid Peschke. Ingrid, this is everybody.
Well, hello, everybody, and thank you, Scout, for that lovely introduction. And I'll just add that, unfortunately, I'm not a teacher yet, but I am definitely a practitioner of Christian Science healing. So, you know, in that way, I guess I have a teaching side of it, but not an official teacher, as some practitioners have become. So I want to make that little correction there.
Yes, please. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, and I'm really looking forward to our conversation.
And so we're in a place where one piece I like to point out, and it's kind of my own phrase, is that healing should not be reserved for disease. But healing is really, in my view, bringing more energy, more awareness, more connection into a situation that otherwise, well, doesn't have as much of it. Right now, here we are. Well, quite frankly, everybody's getting to find out a whole lot more about how well they get along with themselves, and a whole lot more about how they dance with their own family. So I would really love to explore a whole spiritual perspective on home and family. What's the first thing that you're noticing as you're working with your clients, Ingrid?
You know, I will say I think it's a great sort of focus to have because, you know, with social distancing and working from home requirements, you know, many of us have found ourselves spending more time than ever at home and with our families. And I understand that some are not, you know, some are out there, they're on the front lines, they're working in the grocery stores, they're working in essential locations where they have to be there serving the public. And we're just so grateful for those folks. And, you know, some folks have lost their jobs, so it's not easy for everyone. You know, I understand that. And there are different dynamics that can be set up because of those things, you know, children at home, young children, all kinds of things. You know, I have the privilege of being able to work from home generally, so this hasn't been a huge change for me. My husband and I both work from home. The biggest change for us was having our college students coming home and our student who, I'm sorry, our son who has graduated but was living in France. And, you know, just getting him home was quite a wonderful, I guess, demonstration of prayer, really, because it was sort of in the height of things when France was totally shut down. And so this has been 3 months of great togetherness and figuring out that dynamic that, you know, we've had all along as a family of five, but hadn't had for a while, you know, all together. I'm sure there's a lot of folks out there who can relate to that on different levels. And, you know, every day is an opportunity to see more of healing. And to me, you talked about healing. You know, I think that finding your center and finding a sense of peace at home, and maybe we can define that a little bit more. Home, of course, is you know, physically it's a structure, right? It's a place that you come home to, you feel safe, you walk in, you've got everything you love, hopefully, in that space, and you feel secure. But, you know, not everybody has that. So let's talk about what everybody has. And I think that's where the spiritual connection comes in, is really thinking of home as deeper than walls and boards and doors. You know, it's our consciousness, and that's what I've learned that has given me a sense of stability and great hope and security when maybe my home foundation didn't feel as secure. You know, I've always gone back to that place of, you know, home is your consciousness. It's the place where you dwell. You really, all of us can probably agree that our thoughts determine our sense of peace and where our thoughts rest, where they find that peace. So maybe we can think about that as we discuss this topic today, is really taking notice of our thoughts. And then how do we maintain them? You know, for me, it's been through a lifetime of a prayer practice based on the teachings of Christian Science that has really opened up this concept for me.
There's a place when I'm teaching meditation, and it's another part of my practices, one of the things I point out to people is that it seems like people expect that what they should be able to do is go into their mind and be in a silent space for 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 6 hours. And that should just be it, which I think is the rough equivalent of thinking I should go to the gym and lift up the weights once and then walk out with nice beefy muscles.
Okay.
So when you're talking to people and you're finding that their thoughts are running amok with their, I'll just phrase it, their internal voices, just to use the word. When you're talking to people and you find that their internal voices, their internal thoughts are running into loops that are running around chasing and biting them in the backside, what is your perspective on how to bring healing to that, Ingrid, and how to bring that around to a place where they can interrupt those thought loops?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I would say the first thing that I try to practice is being a good listener. And by that I mean not just listening, although it's important to listen to the individual that I'm talking to. It really requires a deeper listening, and that's listening to God. And I define God through my practice of Christian Science. I've learned that God is so much bigger than just that word. It also, God is love, you know, with a capital L, divine love, divine mind, spirit. So when you're listening for those messages from this greater, most powerful source, you get the messages that you truly need to find peace, and not only for yourself, but for others. And if that's what, you know, my work requires me to do, is listening to God first, not to myself, not to human wisdom or reasoning or opinions or advice giving, but really listening to that direction that comes. And I think you can only find that when you go into that quiet space. You know, Jesus talks about going into your closet, it's your prayer closet. Well, obviously, it's not a physical place, is it? It's a place where you feel like you can shut out all the concerns and the fears and the things that swirl in your around you, and find a space where you can listen. And that's where I found the most powerful answers to life's issues, is that listening. And you know, it's not always words. Sometimes that listening comes just in a form of a feeling, just feeling peaceful again, and feeling connected to something higher and bigger, a larger power, the only power. And that's what, you know, the scriptures remind us that God is our very breath. And so that must be good. That relates to this whole issue, too, I think, with the coronavirus. I've thought about that a lot. It makes us wise and discerning. You know, in Job, from the New Living Translation of the Bible, it says, there's a spirit within people and the breath of the Almighty within them, and that makes them intelligent. I just love that. That intelligence, that wisdom that's sort of higher than ourselves, is what guides our lives. And so I think that, you know, when we think of our home as built around that strength of spirit, then the foundation of the spiritual ideas that we take in, that we literally kind of breathe in, can't be disturbed or destroyed, and we gain more of a sense of security. And that helps a lot. So I start with listening and discerning then how to respond. And there's no case that's the same. There's no sort of formula, you know, for how to respond to people. Everyone comes with a unique solution, I would say. And God knows the solution. And I think you can see that when you look at sort of, you know, the New Testament, you look at Jesus' healings and the apostles, that they're all quite unique. There's no one that is the same. Mm-hmm. I guess the thing that makes them the same is that calling on that source of good. I mean, even Jesus said, I can of mine own self do nothing. You know, he looked to God for that power. And, you know, that to me is our model. I hope that helps.
Yeah, perfect. So there's a fun place that now within our households we're getting to see a microcosm of society. But certainly there's a level of polarity in the public discourse at the moment. And I find myself coming back to thinking that even within my own household, and then certainly within my community, and then certainly within this polarity that seems to be going on, there's a reminder that everybody thinks they're the good guy. In any place where there's a difference of view, everybody thinks they're the good guy. Even if it's in my own house and we're having a standoff, both sides think they're the good guy. I'm just going to toss that in your lap. Let's pretend that we've got that going on. Where do we go with the other person thinks they're the good guy and that we're the one that's wrong, and we're certain we're the good guy and that they're the one that's wrong?
Yeah, I think that's such a good question, and I don't have all the answers to that, because it does seem like it kind of pops up over and over, doesn't it? You know, the self-righteousness, I know I'm right, and you know, how can I convince the other guy that I'm right so that they stop arguing or they stop defending themselves? I mean, isn't that the basis of all arguments? It's the fact that two people are on opposite sides of an issue, essentially, and can't see why they need to budge. The only thing I can say to that, a couple things, actually. There's a Bible passage that's been meaningful to me. And also there was a time when I had kind of a standoff like that, and I was praying about it, and what came to me was not the answer that I wanted to hear, because I knew I was right. Just like you were saying, Scott, like, I knew I was right. So I was like, God, you know, just give me the idea I need so that I can share that, so that this individual knows that I'm right and I'll win. And you know what came to me was, the only winner is the one who loves.
Ooh, say that twice. Sorry, say that
the
again.
The only one who wins is the one who loves.
Ooh, sweet.
You win every time when you side with love. And you lose, conversely, when you side with discord and hatred. Now that really woke me up, because I worship, as I said before, a God who is love. And I thought, well, wait a minute, am I being a hypocrite when I am not loving because I feel that I'm right, when I'm self-righteous? And don't get me wrong, I still am learning this lesson. but you know, I mean, I don't think there's a one stop and you're done. But I do think there are gradual moments of growing in grace and getting better. You know, in James it says, where envying and strife is, there's confusion and every evil work. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace. Doesn't that sound a little bit like what Jesus said in his Beatitudes? You know, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall inherit the earth. Now, our earth needs peacemakers right now, doesn't it? I mean, Mother Earth has had a nice rest, hasn't she, in the last 3 months? You know, there's been less kind of out and about and driving and doing and all of those things, right? We share this home, this space, with every other person and life form. And I feel like this time of quarantine has given a much-needed sort of breath of fresh air to Mother Earth. And it's funny, because we've also had this contrary example of, you know, unfortunately, with George Floyd, who lost his breath, and that caused the whole earth to wake up in a way, right? Everyone's saying, oh my gosh, this is wrong. This should not happen. And so you could say there are people on opposite sides of that, which you know, that whole issue, which one would hope everyone would be on the same page, right?
Yes.
So I think that I love that idea of where envying and strife is, there's confusion and every evil work, but the wisdom that is from above is first pure, and it's peaceful, it's gentle, it's easy to be entreated, it's easy to take in, like a breath of fresh air. And so I want to keep coming back to that idea of the spirit within us. That's the real breath. That's the life form of all of us. That's what gives us, you know, our ability to harmonize with one another and share this earth together in a way that's peaceful. Anyways, I may have gotten off track just a little bit, no, but that to me is the crux of the issue. Is are we loving, not are we right? Because there's always going to be people on opposite sides of an issue. And it can be really confusing, don't you think? I mean, like, let's just say you hold a certain political position or whatever it is, and you're confused as to how anyone else could ever think something opposite of that.
Yes.
Maybe it's somebody you really admire. Maybe it's a neighbor or a friend that you really like them. And you can't understand how they don't hold the same views that you do. So what are you going to hold on to? The fact that you are on opposite sides of a political issue, or the fact that you do have this love for one another that brings you together, that can, like, you could ask yourself, will I do this to heal our earth, to heal humanity? Or would I rather separate from this individual over our differing views? Like, that's the question, isn't it? It's an age-old question. Look at Jacob and Esau in the Bible. You know, the brothers, one harmed the other. One was ready to kill the other one. Yet there was this wrestling that happened, and the brothers came together and reconciled through love. And that's a beautiful story. It's a beautiful story of reconciliation after many, many years of holding on to hatred and revenge and anger and even the guilt of feeling that you could hate someone. And so I think that, you know, that's what's needed right now. Mrs. Eddy, Mary Baker Eddy, who's the founder of Christian Science, you know, wrote a book. I know you've talked about this on your show probably, called Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. And it's the companion book that I study in combination with the Bible. For me, it's really opened up the Bible in ways that are so practical. And something she says in her book is, ill-arranged notes produce discord. Tones of the human mind may be different, but they should be concordant in order to blend properly. And I love that because in order to be concordant, it seems to me it goes back to that kind of wonderful inspiration I got at that time, which is to worship love. So if two individuals are truly worshiping God, like they love God, and they think of one expression of loving God as being love itself, then doesn't that make them in concord rather than in discord? And I think that can be just sort of a higher goal. That's what's demanding of all of us right now, you know? Mm-hmm. And she also says in her other writings, pure humanity, friendship, home, the interchange of love, bring to earth a foretaste of heaven. Don't we all want that?
Perfect. I was reading an article that you published, Ingrid, and I just loved one phrase in it because it caught my eye. Y'all can find it online. Her last name is spelled P-E-S-C-H-K-E. But you wrote, a daily goal of mine was to find solutions to any challenge I faced through prayer, to consider things from a spiritual vantage point in a quiet communion with God. A spiritual vantage point in prayer. And that's a word that I like to touch into in this program every time. What does the word pray or prayer mean for you? How do you know you're in it? How do you know you hit the mark? How do you know you're on it? What is it when you do that, and how do you know you're doing it?
Well, that is a really good question, and it's also one that, you know, I've spent a lifetime just kind of exploring. But I do think it needs expanding, because you can say pray, and it can mean many things to many people, right? It can be out loud, it can be in church, it can be in a space, or, you know,
now
a sacred
space. Just rote repetition.
This is it. You know, so what I've learned is there's a couple ways of looking at prayer. One is a prayer of affirmation, and one is the prayer of petition. Now, the prayer of petition is more like, you know, God, please help me. You know, I need this now, and I can't survive if you don't give it. And, you know, that's not a bad prayer. It can be very much of a lifeline sometimes for people. And it happens maybe in desperate moments. The prayer of affirmation, though, is something that I would say is more of a, along the lines of a daily prayer, where you're really affirming the good that you know is true, where you're actually affirming it's gratitude, right, is a form of prayer, isn't it? You're acknowledging good right in front of you. Instead of saying, I need this good, you're saying, I have this good now. And there's a kind of a difference because it does sort of represent where your thought is. But let's take it a little bit deeper. Prayer, and in fact, Mary Baker Eddy, one of the first chapters in her book, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, is called prayer. I think she recognized that people could come to this book and say, what is this? How do I do it? And I recommend that you read that chapter. It's short and pithy and fabulous, and it gave me a huge grounding for how to think through what prayer is.
Nice.
But, you know, it's not easy to unpack sometimes. I think for me, the deepest prayers that I've had have been ones that came from a place of humble listening. And I think we talked about that earlier, you know, just this idea of not talking to God, but just listening. And, you know, what I've learned is that those, what I've come to learn as angel messages, that is quiet, gentle, peaceful ideas that come to my thought, that to me is God talking to each one of us individually in a way that we can understand. You know, it's really interesting to think about the, you know, thousands of languages in our world that people use. And you think, well, does God speak Farsi? You know, does he just speak English? How does he speak to his children? No, he speaks to you through your heart, right? In a way you understand. And there's no language that is, I mean, love is its own language, isn't it? So what we hear from God is often a feeling. It's sometimes it's direction. Sometimes it's a, you know, a way to go forward. It's how to do things. Yes, I do think that we get clarity when we're listening. Often, so what I wait for with prayer is I always ask myself, am I being humble or am I coming with a whole list of things? You know, am I being, am I in a position of feeling fearful? And is this prayer helping me to feel at peace? Because that's the opposite of fear, right? Mm-hmm. When you feel at peace and you're confident. Am I outlining? Am I saying, well, this is how it has to be done, so I'm going to wait till you tell me exactly what I've already figured out? And that never works. It's never the right thing. You know, so I've learned to sort of abandon my agenda. And also, especially when you're in a position of potentially counseling others, that is, in a ministry like I have with my prayer practice, you know, I really have to ask myself and remind myself not to do any counseling or advice giving, because that's not my job. My job is to know that that individual has their own relationship with God, that they're listening to God, and God is communicating directly with them. And the prayer helps to open that up, you know, really to see that that's all that's going on. You know, sometimes I've had patients say to me, I mean, it's as if nothing ever happened. Why did I think that was such a big deal? To me, that's the healing. That's the healing, when you realize that really good was going on. Or there's a solution that comes about that's lovely, you know. I love prayer because it's so creative. I can give you an example of sort of the practicality of it too. And I was saying that sometimes it's a moment of desperation. You know, we do have those moments. Everybody has them, you know, mm-hmm. where you're like, okay, I need a lifeline or I need something right now. And I don't know what to do. And, you know, I remember when I was far from home, I was living in Japan and I was teaching and I was a college student. And I was in Tokyo And I had spent the day, and I was, you know, kind of exploring, and I had been with some friends. But then I was on my own. I was getting back on a train. This is back in the days where you don't have cell phones. You know, can you imagine? No internet, no cell phones, no nothing. And I also didn't speak Japanese. I kind of went over there and just sort of roughed it, which wasn't easy at the time. A lot of Japanese don't speak good English. Some do. But, I mean, you know, that's why I was there. I was teaching English. So at any rate, I find myself in the middle of this train station in Tokyo, and I completely was lost. Like, I didn't know which train to take to get back to my friend's house. And Tokyo is a little bit like New York City. It's huge. And so I really panicked. I had a flight home to San Francisco the next day, and I really felt lost. I just felt like I, you know, had demonstrated a sense of home all summer. This is the end of my summer being there. And I had really just been so grateful for all the friends I'd made and things, the connections and everything. But then I was standing paralyzed in the middle of this train station. There's people buzzing all around me, you know, businessmen and women, everything going on. They all knew what they were doing. And I felt like, wow, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know where to go. And I guess I'd gotten off at the wrong stop. I don't know. Either way, it was like I just literally didn't know where to go. So I reached out and was like, God, I need your help. I really need your help, and I don't know how to go. And it was a split-second prayer, and I had this feeling of, like, I am with you, and I will guide you. And my fear drained away from me. Like, it was just a half-second thing. And, you know, at that moment, in the busyness of this train station, this man came up to me, this really sweet Japanese man dressed in a business suit. And in his broken English, he said, can I help you? And I told him the address of where I needed to go. It was pretty, like, just a street name. That was it. And he said, follow me. He took me across the train station to paid for my fare, walked me onto the train, found a couple on the train. They had leis around their necks. They had just come back from Hawaii. They smelled amazing. Yeah. And he said to them in Japanese, he told them, please take care of her and make sure she gets to her stop. And he just held my hand, waved goodbye, and the train left. And I remember thinking to myself, wow, like that was my angel, like a real live angel, not just a thought. It was actual and real. And, you know, I made it home and I was so grateful. But I have never forgotten that moment. You know, right where there was confusion, suddenly there was this beautiful sense of love and peace and guidance and joy. And, you know, that's just a small example of, I think, sometimes where prayer gives us this really confident sense that God is with us.
That's a beautiful, beautiful place of reaching that moment and finding your place back into your center and back into the flow. Carlos, heads up. I'm going to go a little bit early because we've hit a place. We're going to just take a quick break, Ingrid, and let everybody identify the station, remind them of the show, reintroduce, and we'll come right back with more of Spiritual Perspectives.
San Francisco.
Hey, when you hear that music, you know you're listening to Spiritual Perspectives. Spiritual Perspectives, looking at real life from, well, a spiritual perspective. We want to give an appreciation to the First Church of Christ Science in Mill Valley and a coordinating sponsorship of a board of 50 churches who have sponsored and brought this show together for you today. I'm Scout Bartlett. You can find copies of this show up on spirituality.com, christianscience.com. But I do want to also invite you, if you see a Christian Science reading room, I've tested this. I've wandered in, and they basically offered if I needed help, I could have help, and if I didn't need help, they would leave me alone. I've found the same thing when I've attended Christian Science church services. There is no inundation. There's just friendly people that want to say, hey. So they have services on Sundays, and there's a Wednesday evening service that's testimonials. So thank you very much to the First Church of Christ Science to bring you Spiritual Perspectives. We will also archive this program up on the website ifidknownthen.com, up under Radio Archives and Spiritual Perspectives. To reintroduce, we're talking today with Ingrid Peschka. Ingrid has been, well, Japan and apparently around the world, certainly around the country, studying and connecting, and we were just talking about prayer and connection. So welcome back, Ingrid.
Thanks, Scout. And I might just add, too, I know a lot of folks are, you know, still cautiously going out, and a lot of churches are not open. So if people are looking to join a Christian Science Church service and aren't sure how to do that or if it's possible even now, I recommend going to ChristianScience.com. The worldwide headquarters for the church is in Boston, and you can listen live to the church service, which is recorded in studio, not in the church right now, still not open. But you can listen to the entire service online on Sundays at 10 a.m. Eastern time, so 7 a.m., but it does have a replay throughout the day, so do feel free to do that as well. And I know a lot of the Christian Science reading rooms are doing curbside pickups and all kinds of things to accommodate folks right now. So there are ways to, you know, access these resources and maybe test it out from from your own home.
Oh, fabulous. So. That's a fabulous update I didn't have. And I do like to point that out, that if our listeners, if you've got some, let's say, pressure points around the word church, we bring the show up here on the station for you to be able to bump into these ideas and find out if these ideas go together with the things that you're learning and studying already, just to give you one more resource where you don't have to invent your own spiritual wheel. You can go find out what studies other people have done, including all the way back to Mary Baker Eddy. You made a comment earlier, Ingrid, that I wanted to jump back to of you said that if we can get at peace rather than fearful, which was beautifully illustrated, of taking even just a moment of being at peace there lost in the middle of Tokyo, and then suddenly the world flowed back together for you. I'd like to take that you said fearful and peace are the opposite. I've noticed that sometimes the next layer of fearful is anger. Even if it's within my household, or again, if it's with a person that to my eye is, you know, I'm the good guy and they're being so stupid, how can they not see the obvious of this particular perspective? What have you found in terms of if, because you're honest enough to mention that your buttons still get pushed, and I will actually recognize that I remember from my Bible school stories, there were stories where Jesus even got mad, so I figure that being able to come back out of it is more important than never getting there.
Yeah.
What have you noticed of people being able to get out of the I'm right, they're wrong, they should get it, I should win, they should lose anger play, or even just the claws and teeth anger place to find their way back to peace?
Well, you're asking the big whammy questions. I love it. I actually think they're the kinds of things we should ask ourselves daily, because ultimately no one's perfect. We've got things we're working through, and especially within the home unit, you know, you might think, wow, I'm like such a great person outside, but when I come home, man, that's like my buttons get pushed. Why am I this different person at home, or, you know, whatever. And it's because ultimately, you know, you feel super comfortable, hopefully, with the folks that are at home. They're your family. That's your family unit. You kind of let your hair down. You're going to be yourself, you know, and so you don't sort of have all the same filters up that are like, wait, I need to be kind. I need to be loving. I need to be patient. I need to be forgiving. I need to, you know, I don't want someone to perceive me the wrong way. And I kind of have to say, like, what if we all did that a little more at home? What if we stop thinking of our family as the ones that, like, accepted us for everything we do and say and are, no matter what, even if we're really ugly, and we started thinking of them a tiny bit more like our neighbor, and we treated them like our neighbor? And I feel like that helps to change your mindset. Like, wow, what if I actually thought of my spouse the way I think about, you know, my neighbor across the street? Now, obviously, they're not the same. They're not one and the same. But can you tell that there's a little switch in your behavior patterns a little bit? Okay. So why are we treating our neighbor potentially better than our spouse? Who is the person we supposedly love the most? Like, we don't want to get into those positions of having to say, wow, I'm so sorry, or forgive me, or I was really a jerk. Because this is the person we love the most, where we should love the most, and we should want to be our best selves with that individual. We want to bring out the best in them and the best in ourselves, vice versa. You know, I think sometimes I love this quality of grace. Now, grace is something we talk about in our home a lot, especially when, as you say, somebody feels they're right. And we have a loving family and a wonderful unit. But like anybody, there's going to be things that come up, and I think that you're going to have differing opinions and differing thoughts on things. I mean, we've got a boy, girl, boy. So girl in the middle, two boys, 19, 22, and 24.
The absolute center of calm and peacefulness.
They're all good friends. They have different relationships. But it's, look, you know, and they're technically adults, right? But they're
right.
All at home right now. Everybody's at home. And, you know, we're still the parents. So, you know, you're going to have those little, like, power struggles that come up occasionally, little things that come up, like, I you know, whatever. One thing I've really learned to do as a parent, especially in this situation, because you think, wow, my work's done. Yeah, but, you know, wash my hands of that. But it's really, you know, you continue to be a parent your whole life in different ways, and you have to adapt to those things. And, you know, I think that grace is a really important quality. Now, what do I mean by that? The other day I was talking to one of our children about this, and I said, okay, you're right. You really feel you're right about this issue, and you feel as though no one is understanding your position. But what about, what's happening when you're arguing your point of view? What's happening? Well, there's a lot of strife. No one's understanding what my position is. Okay, so is it working for you? No. All right. Is this a good time to be saying these things? Have you thought about how it's affecting the other individual? Those are the kinds of conversations we have. And we finally got to the end of this, and I said, I love this quality of grace. And so we started talking about it. And it, to me, it means that you yield. You yield your viewpoint, your position, out of great care and affection for the person in your life that you love. That, in fact, you don't want to expose their weaknesses and faults and point out everything you think they need to change in one moment, because you're expressing grace. Because you care enough to share with them in moments when they're receptive, in moments when, in fact, both of you are learning in those moments. And I love this parable of the tares and the wheat that, you know, Jesus shares in the Bible. Are you familiar with that?
No, I don't have that
parable.
One.
Sorry, what?
I don't know that one.
Okay. So there's this parable, which is a story and an illustration of a spiritual point that Jesus shares. And, you know, he often shared parables that were related to farming or, you know, shepherding, because those were the people he was talking to. So they understood these stories. Obviously, this is a farming one. And it's this story where this farmer has a wheat field, and somebody comes in and they sow what are called tares, T-A-R-E, into the field. Now, tares, that was a weed, and it was a vicious weed that looked a lot like wheat when it was growing, but it wasn't wheat. It was just bad. And so it was actually an offense. You could be fined if you did that under Roman law. But he shared the story. So all of a sudden, the servants of the householder, of the farmer, come and they say, look, somebody's done this. It's not our fault. Should we tear it out? And the householder, the farmer, says, no, don't tear it out, because if you do that, this weed was so strong, it would pull out the wheat as well. So everything would come out, not just the bad stuff, but all the good stuff too. And he said, just wait until the harvest, and then we'll be able to separate the tare from the wheat and harvest the wheat. And you're just going to have to be patient. Well, that's what they did, and then it was okay. Now, let's think about this in the spiritual light for a minute. What does that mean? One way I've thought about that story is that sometimes from our perspective, we think, wow, somebody's come in and messed up this person that I love or this thing in my life. And it used to be good, and now it has this bad, evil stuff alongside of it. Like, you know, it's not good anymore. Now I'm going to go and I'm going to tell them what's wrong so that we can fix this. You know, and sometimes you have this urgent feeling of like, I need to go tell this person what's wrong with them so they can be better. But then in the process, you hurt them, right? Maybe, or it's just not time. It's not right. And so you can kind of almost spoil the good that's there. And it's better to be patient and wait until there's a sense of the timing is right. And that's that quality of grace and patience that I think are so vital to human relationships. And I think that's what Jesus was saying. At least it spoke to me in terms of family and parenting sometimes. Because when you're raising children, you can feel like you can see what's wrong and you want to fix it.
Yeah.
And you want to tell them right away. Or maybe your spouse, let's say it's your spouse. I want to tell them what's wrong. Let's get rid of this thing and wrong problem and be moving on. But it doesn't always work. It can be hurtful. It can cause arguments, all kinds of things. So I think that story, that parable has meant a lot to me when I've felt like I want to rush in and fix something. And instead apply this sense of grace and patience and really wait until it's ripe and ready for removing and seeing that removal. Because ultimately each one of us is a pure spiritual idea of God. We are good at the core, and it helps to separate that which we, you know, which isn't so good about us from the individual. And that to me is a great prayer, is to be patient and pray for the goodness of those that we love. And then be patient with them and graceful as we move through times that may not feel so great. And I hope that helps a little bit. You were saying fear can turn to anger, and I think you're so right. You know, it can be actually an expression of what feels like a hurtful place inside of us. You know, if we're feeling afraid of something, sometimes we do express it in anger, don't we? Mm-hmm. And we don't mean to. I love this passage in 2 Timothy in the Bible, which is in the New Testament. God has not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. Now, anger is the opposite of power. It would convince us that it gives us power, but it makes us weak. And it isn't the expression of a sound mind, is it? It is actually the expression of a mind in turmoil. The opposite of that, of course, is love. So that's what I would say to that.
Which brought me back around to a piece that I want, because sometimes we'll go, as you said, where anger, the inner voice of anger tells us that that is power and it's going to make it happen and it'll allow mm-hmm. us to dominate the situation and mm-hmm. be all teeth and claws and growl and fight the other fearful thing back.
You just defined it perfectly. Yes.
And there's a couple of phrases that you said that I can hear what you're saying, but I'd like to bring it out. You mentioned sure. grace as yield, and then earlier you had mentioned humble versus strong. The tricky part that I find, some people seem to take the notion that if they are a loving being, that what that means is that socially they have to be a doormat.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. where's the ability to be strong and grace-filled and yielding and humble and yet stand firm?
Yeah, that's such a good point. I mean, I've had so many people ask me that. And again, I really go back to the whole idea of when you love, you win. Have you ever lost a whole day or more over an argument?
Yeah.
Okay, so the day starts out and you're excited, it's going to be a great day, and then all of a sudden it's just bad. Because there's an argument. And somebody or both people are yielding to this idea of anger as power, or I'm right, or I don't want to be a doormat. And the whole day, maybe the whole week or more, years can be lost to this kind of a standpoint. Who's the doormat then? We become a doormat for evil. And when I say evil, I mean anything that would yield our thoughts over to anger, disgrace, you know, joylessness. To me, that's the doormat consciousness, being walked all over by the opposite of God. Giving ourselves over to that makes us powerless to do what is right, to think what is right, to reclaim our days, our joy, our peaceful relationships. That's what matters the most. So the next time the temptation, I would call it, comes to anyone's thought that they're a doormat if they're going to be kind or good. And that doesn't mean that you are letting someone, that doesn't mean you don't stand up for what is right. But ask yourself, ask God, what does it mean to stand up for what is right? What is right? And, you know, sometimes, I had a really good experience once where I was in a position of, I guess you could say, authority, which is like power, right? Where I was able to make decisions that affected others. And I think those are the kinds of situations where we really have to check ourselves, whether we're a parent or a teacher or a lawmaker or, you know, a manager at work or whatever our hat is that we're wearing that gives us a position of power, whether we're the president or we're, you know, whoever we are, the governor, like, okay, we've been given this sense of power, if you will, right? But that doesn't make us powerful, does it? What gives us true power is exercising wisdom in those situations, as well as, again, I'm going to go back to this quality of grace, where we actually love those who we are working with enough to understand what's best to do. And it's not always easy to make those choices. So in this case, I had a position of authority. And I made a decision that affected someone else that, you know, she did not like at all. Now, I had no idea she wouldn't like this decision. And again, it goes back to what you were saying. I knew I was right. I made the right decision. It was absolutely right. And it was in an education setting. And it was for her child. So I had made a decision that I knew was right. But she disagreed wholeheartedly with me. And in fact, was so angry, and I had no idea, but she came to me and she was shaking. And she said, your decision is ruining, you know, my child's whatever. And I thought, oh my heavens, you know, I had no idea that this would be so upsetting. And I, of course, had every right to make this choice. And so I said to her, well, how about if we meet in about a week? And this was an individual who was a praying individual as well. I knew that. I said, why don't we meet in about a week and see how we feel about it? And so I went back to prayer. You know what I did? I said to God, okay, I know I'm right, so just help me to know how I can tell her that this is the right decision.
Come on, God,
like,
help me convince her.
This is obvious. I mean, this woman is so messed up. Like, she just doesn't get it. Like, I know you'll show her the light. Well, my answer was not what I expected. And it's a phrase in the Bible. It's agree with thine adversary quickly while thou art in the way with him. Okay, that's interesting. Agree with my adversary. So what this actually means is it goes back to biblical times where if you had a dispute with your neighbor and you were walking to go see a lawyer, you could agree with them along the way and come to an amicable decision before you get to the lawyer and then walk away from the situation. So it's sort of like coming to, you know, a common understanding. But the phrase agree with thine adversary quickly kept coming to me. And I was like, God, what do you mean? Why am I supposed to agree with her? She's wrong. Well, then it came to me, you are agreeing with good and the ability to have harmony and peace in this relationship that matters to you, not with the decision that you feel is right or wrong, but agreeing with harmony in the relationship. And I thought, oh my gosh, like that's going to make me a doormat if I go back to her and say, you're right, let's go ahead and do what you want to do. And it may not even be best for her, you know, the situation.
Mm-hmm.
But it kept coming to me. And so when we met the next week, I could tell that she was a little on edge again. And I looked up at her and I said, you know, I think you're right. I mean, it was hard for me, Scout, to say this. But I had come to this conclusion through prayer. So I said, I think you're right. And I felt at peace about it. Let's do what you said is the best thing to do. And do you know her whole demeanor changed? It totally changed. Like she went from being tense to just melting in front of me. And she looked up and she said, actually, I have a problem with insisting on my way. And I need help. And I was like, what? This is just like, whoa. You know, like I can't. And she said, I think I actually need to pray about this for another week before we decide what to do. Well, Scout, that was really cool for me because I felt like it wasn't me or her. It wasn't about who's right in that moment. It was about this sort of like character develop, this like loving, humbling, really happening by being obedient to God. And so I said, okay, you know, I want you to feel comfortable about this. And so we came together again about a week later, and she did decide that her way of action was the right one, and I was totally at peace with that, and we went ahead with it. And you know what was interesting is that while, you know, this was many years ago, I don't think it affected her child in any kind of adverse way. What I do know it affected was our relationship, and I'll never forget, I don't know, maybe several months later, because we had to interact with each other quite a bit, I found myself at a meeting, and I walked over to the table where they had some refreshments, and there was this huge bowl of fresh strawberries that somebody had brought from a farm. And she walked over and stood next to me, and we both ate this sweet fruit, and she looked at me, and she said, oh, I love these berries. They're so delicious. How are you? And it was this happy, friendly, beautiful conversation over these sweet berries, and I couldn't help but think of the connection of the wheat, the fruit had come to fruition, and our relationship was intact. It had not been destroyed over willful insistence on one or the other's way, and I was so grateful for that. So I'm sorry if that was a long example, but that to me is my example of why you're not a doormat when you listen to do the right thing that is loving and preserving of a relationship over your sense of what you think is right.
And at the same place, had her proposal been disadvantageous, you would have felt in a place where you could point out the parts of it that maybe needed to be refined now that you were connected again.
That's exactly right. And in fact, that was the case. You know, there was a good relationship there, to the extent that we could, you know, have a harmonious discourse. And that was important too. Yeah, absolutely. I think she realized too that I wasn't just, you know, leveraging my position, that I was actually, you know, willing to work with her where she was and maybe respect her position as a parent as well. And this was not a public school situation, so this was different. But I definitely feel that, you know, that has taught me a lot of lessons, that situation.
Perfect. I had a phrase that I've heard that I've studied now for a while that was simply, I forgive them, not because they deserve forgiveness, but because I deserve peace.
And, you know, I would take that a step further and say because we deserve peace.
Oh,
our world,
yes, thank you.
Deserves peace. Our world deserves peace. And I think if more of us, you know, really fought for that sense of peace and good in our hearts and our lives, in the small microcosms of our lives, little moments we would see it in the bigger places. And that's what we need right now more than ever. It's hard. It's not that it's easy, you know.
And it's forever an internal choice. I get to choose whether or not I'm choosing, well, as you expressed it, I get to choose whether or not I'm choosing to worship love and whether or not I'm willing to remember that when I love, I win.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And, you know, sometimes when you see the best expressions of that, you see it with children.
Perfect.
You can find some of the best examples just by watching children playing together and interacting together and making the decision that they would rather play happily for the rest of the day than argue over who got the toy or who made the best whatever picture.
Or whether or not I've even known you long enough to consider you my friend.
Exactly. Like, there's this sort of happy acceptance of we're supposed to be kind to one another and enjoy each other's company.
Everybody, you can find out more about Ingrid. She writes beautifully. She's up on the web. Ingrid Peschke, P-E-S-C-H-K-E. Ingrid, thank you so much for being with us. This has been a delight. I wish we had two more hours.
Oh, me too, Scout. I absolutely loved talking to you. It's been just wonderful. Thank you so much for having me on the program.
Thank you so much. This has been Spiritual Perspectives. My name is Scout, like Pathfinder, Bartlett, like Pears. You can find this archived up on the web in a couple of days. You can find this archived up on the web on our website, ifidknownthen.com. But go look for Ingrid, P-E-S-C-H-K-E. Thank you all very much. I'd like to ask everybody two favors for me, please. One, treat yourself as a loved one, because you truly are. And just notice, no matter where on earth you are, it's a perfect day to have a great day on purpose.